Good morning, Sandy Springs. Pete Ludovis here with Inside the Black Box, channeling the spirit of Airman First Class Adrian Kronauer, Armed Forces Radio DJ extraordinaire, and subject of the film Good Morning, Vietnam. Why? Just so I have an excuse to yell loudly into the microphone and wake you people up on this bright and sunny Saturday morning here in Sandy Springs. Why? Because today we'll be talking about science and technology. Specifically, we'll be talking about teaching science in the classroom with our special guest, Judith Carter, chair of the science department at North Springs High School, right here in Sandy Springs. Just a reminder to our listening audience, this is show number 7 for Inside the Black Box. That's right, show number 7.
And we haven't been canceled yet.
Exactly, and as far as I know, no one has been taken into custody by the FCC. Isn't that correct, Dave?
Well, not during the daytime hours, anyway.
Okay, not that you'll admit to. All right, that was Dave Moxley, who's working the big board for us this morning. Dave Moxley, station owner, general manager, and all-around radio guru. And now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, my co-host for the show, direct from the School of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Georgia Tech, the only man to use advanced Fourier transforms to analyze the acoustics of that whoopa, whoopa, whoopa sound your corduroy pants make, Dr. Bill Hunt. Bill,
hello.
How you doing?
Good morning, good morning. How are you?
So you were out in California recently.
Yeah, I was ambulance chasing, as I call it, expert witness testimony. We'll have to do a show on consulting things that people that are engineers can do. There are probably some interesting stories there. But, yeah, it's the first time I'd actually been in L.A. other than at the airport. And, you know, you think the traffic in Atlanta is bad, but it's just...
Yeah, exactly.
You just get out and crawl. You'll get there faster.
But while you were out there, you had a bit of an experience with your other alter ego, stand-up comedy.
Yeah, so I did stand-up comedy at a place in Culver City, and I didn't get any laughs, but neither was anybody else. It was like 5 minutes. Everybody's doing 5 minutes. And it was like trying to do stand-up at a funeral for a suicide victim. Just no really way to get the crowd going. But it's kind of curious. I was talking to another friend that it just my – superficial impression was that everybody there feels like they're one handshake away from making it in the movies or TV.
Well, aren't they? I mean, have you ever been to a National Science Foundation panel and everyone's one step away from the shortlist for the Nobel Prize?
Yeah, that's the scientific corollary for sure, yeah.
And that's so maybe that's a good analogy, right? That I know you said it before that doing stand-up comedy has really helped you deal with talks and presentations.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking just before the show started about one of our favorite movies, Stargate.
Yeah.
And of course, it's when the main character in the movie was given a talk, and everybody was laughing at him, saying his theories were worthless, things like that.
And they walked out on him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Much like stand-up comedy, perhaps.
Yeah, a lot like that.
So, just a reminder that last week's show was on infertility treatment with Dr. Mark Perlow, medical director of Georgia Reproductive Specialists. And for those of you that either caught part of that show and wanted more information, or hadn't listened to it, if you are interested, of course, we'll have that available as an MP3 file. On the website. And if you want more information on the website, there are two important links. One to IVF.com. That's a real easy one to remember. That is associated with Mark and Georgia Reproductive Specialists. It's also got a plethora of information about infertility treatment. Also,
so Madonna might want to write that down.
Exactly.
Next time she's running a raffle for who's going to father her next child.
And, right? And despite the fact we engaged in nothing but cheap jokes for a solid hour about infertility treatment, there's nothing funny about infertility. I actually mentioned my wife's and my own experience with infertility treatment. So if you are looking for a little support in that arena, we also have a link to the Georgia chapter of Resolve, which is the support group for infertile couples. So both those are on there. Feel free to log in and check out those links. Let's see. So 2 weeks ago, we chatted with Larry Bottomley about chemistry in the classroom. And we'll probably have Larry back sometime because we barely scratched the surface on that. And one of the difficulties that we pointed out is that labeling on the sides of consumer products and food products is very non-standard. Sometimes you see generic terms like artificial flavor, artificial color. And in last month's issue of Chemical and Engineering News, which I'm sure is something you folks read on a regular basis, they actually talked about how they are planning on changing some of that, specifically with regard to a red dye that comes from ground-up beetles.
Not John Paul George.
Right, Ringo, exactly.
But the little bug.
They're used in common products like Good and Plenty candy, which is a favorite of mine, or Dannon fruit on the bottom yogurt. Just as a dye, so there's very small amounts in here, but apparently in the future they may list that as some sort of dye derived from ground-up beetles. Okay, so let me think. Is there anything else we want to talk about, Bill?
I will never eat Good and Plenty again after the... You say beetle, but I think cockroach, and it goes downhill from there. But I
guess I don't have a problem with that. I mean, being a chemical engineer, you see some of the stuff that's used to process biomass. You're not too concerned about ground-up cockroaches. So today, after the first break, we're going to bring Judith Carter, who's chair of the science department at North Springs High School right here in Sandy Springs, on. We're going to talk about science in the classroom, trying to teach science in the classroom, more specifically trying to engage students. And would you agree with me, Bill, that is not an easy task?
Well, I mean, we have a benefit being at Georgia Tech. We have great students at Georgia Tech. There are a few outliers. But, you know, they're already kind of motivated when they get there or motivated to get there. But there certainly are different topics that teaching that they're just not fully actively engaged. And so, yes, it's not so bad that they're stabbing each other in the classroom and doing something else, but you're not really fully, don't have them fully in gear. Would be the challenge we have at Georgia Tech on a lot of this stuff. They're kind of going through the motions, but they're not really taking ownership of the learning process.
Right. I mean, they're very bright people, so
right.
We have that
yep.
advantage, as you yep. say. But perhaps the technical term for them, can I use this one, spoiled brat?
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
But,
I would.
Might,
obviously, you
might,
have
yeah,
a better
yeah.
class of students
yeah.
in electrical and computer engineering. So to that end, and this is something we'd like to bring back occasionally as a feature, whenever we address the issue of science education, it's a new feature where we talk about, you know, sort of difficulties in engaging students that we like to call...
Horror Stories from the Classroom.
In the second to last segment today, we'll be talking with our guest Judith Carter, and Bill and I will all share some sort of horror story from the classroom. And to be honest, I think that's the biggest problem I have with students is the ones we get are extremely bright. I guess one of the big problems is that you ask an 18-year-old, and now in Florida they want to ask a 16-year-old to pick their major in high school, which I think
are
is a
kidding?
Huge... No, it's absolutely true. They've actually... Governor Jeb has put that on the books, and they're trying to get that
Just think how Leonardo would have been... Leonardo da Vinci would have benefited from committing to just one thing when he was 16.
Exactly. And I think I probably speak for Bill in that I haven't decided what I want to do when I grow up.
We're doing stand-up and...
Yeah, exactly.
That wasn't in the grad school curriculum.
Yeah, and I bet your wife really enjoys that, doesn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, she provides me with some of the jokes that I can use.
My wife does. I don't think she knows I do jokes about her on the road, but...
Actually, the sad thing is I'm the least funny person in my family, my 10-year-olds.
Oh, you're kidding?
Wow, yeah. I don't know that I can say any of his on the air.
Okay, so your 10-year-old works blue, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
He works blue, and he's better and better stage presence and clever and
wow.
all that stuff. So.
You realize that's a problem, though, because you as an right. academic hope that this scientific ability will rub off on your kids,
yeah.
and I basically just have two smart-aleck kids now. That's what.
Mine are both pretty smart, and they're smart-alecky,
okay.
and they the whole thing with... play amongst mammals is a way of learning. So you'll see these things with the animals where the cubs are like, you know, climbing on the dad lion or something like that. But my kids are getting strong enough that this is getting painful now.
Oh, yeah.
They're climbing
yeah.
on me and grabbing my head.
I have bruises.
Yeah, I
all
do
over
too,
the place.
All the time. Yeah.
yeah. Well, certainly this is some topic. This is a topic we'll get into later today. But maybe you don't find this in electrical and computer engineering. But I find students that are very, very bright. A number of them are doing chemical engineering because they don't really know what they want to do. So we had a student a number of years ago who was advised by a colleague of mine, and she was getting straight A's in math, physics, and chemistry, which is a good indicator of chemical
right.
engineering.
Right.
But she got C's in chemical engineering, and he asked her why. And she said, I really don't like chemical engineering. And he said, the obvious question, why are you majoring in chemical engineering? And she said, because my father and two of my uncles are Georgia Tech chemical engineering alumni. And he said, by God, that's what you're going to major in. Years later, after he advised the student, well, what do you like to do? She said, chemistry. He said, major in chemistry. Years later, he saw her at an American Chemical Society meeting, and she walked up to him, thanked him profusely for the advice, and said, things have worked out well. I'm doing extremely well. She was in graduate school at the time. And then her father walked up 30 seconds later, and he was still angry with the guy advising her to do that.
Well, I think, you know, you see it lesser to an extent now that people are trying to push their kids into certain precise areas. Yeah. I mean, it's not a good thing, I think, when you dictate to that level.
All right, we'll talk more about that after we take a quick break. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on 1620 AM, RadioSandySprings.com. All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. Bill and I are here today with our very special guest, Judith Carter, chair of the science department at North Springs High School right here in Sandy Springs. Judith has more than 30 years' experience teaching high school students. She's taught previously at junior high and taught for about 15 years in colleges. She's got an AP biology. Let's see. She teaches AP biology and global science at North Springs High School in Sandy Springs. She's a lifelong learner who loves the subject. And in fact, she does a lot of lifelong learning. She's got some of it mentioned here. She recently returned from a spring break trip to Belize, where she took a nature trip through jungles, oceans, lagoons, and rivers. In fact, we tried to get her on the show earlier, and that's the reason. That's a pretty darn good reason to go to Belize. She will be traveling to Thailand and Cambodia this summer with a small group of teachers from all over the U.S. They'll be visiting tribal villages, floating villages, and some other major attractions in that area.
And she'll also be checking for us on how well Inside the Black Box is doing in Thailand.
Yes, we're hoping for a big following there in Thailand. Right. So she'll hopefully be teaching some of the village children how to speak a little English. She's the sponsor for the Environmental Club at North Springs High School and took many of the students camping and hiking in the fall. She also took some classes at Jekyll Island 4-H Center recently for marine and ecology studies and traveled to San Antonio to represent the Science and Math Magnet program at the National Consortium of Specialized Science and Math Schools. Judith lives in Dunwoody. She's active at the Northwest Unitarian Universalist Congregation. That church, and with a neighborhood book and bunco club. She likes to camp, hike, dance, and just finished a belly dancing class. Also likes to read and travel. Judy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So in the interest of full and honest disclosure, we pride ourselves in being scientists, that we like to be open and honest with people. I've got a question about your bio. I notice you're involved in a bunco club.
Yes.
So I just wanted to get a little information on that, because my wife runs the bunco club in our neighborhood. And so Bill's giving me this strange look. It's a dice game, right?
It's a dice game.
Right. And it's mainly played by women. They get together for an evening. I contend that it's really an excuse to just have a couple glasses of wine and complain about your dorky husband. Is that true?
Almost.
Okay. So ladies, I believe that to be true. We'll test that hypothesis on further shows. If you're looking for an outlet to complain about your dorky husband and have a glass of wine or two, bunco. If you have it in your neighborhood, look into it.
We should start debunco. A bunch of guys sit around
myths. There you go. Okay, so we're here to talk about teaching science to high school students. And Bill and I would contend that's a difficult thing to do. Are we way off base on that?
You're absolutely on target. It's very, very difficult. But at North Springs, we're lucky in that it is a math science magnet. We do have a math science magnet program. So we do get some students who are really interested in science. But that's just a portion of our school. We also have students who are just there, not really sure why. And we have to motivate them as well.
So one of the biggest things I encounter among my neighbors is, you know, now with, you know, budget cuts and people are worried about economics, the first thing they ask is, you know, well, science classes, why do we need science classes in the high school and the junior high? So in your opinion, what's the most important reason?
Oh, science is so important. It's because you use it in everyday life. You have to solve problems with it. It's a way of thinking, really. It's a way of looking at what's going on, trying to make some observations, maybe figure out, well, could this be the reason? And then you have to test that. If it doesn't test out, you try something else. And it's just a really good way to get through life. So not only in science, but in everyday life, you need it. That's one of the most important things. But I think we need to plan for the future. I just am reading The Earth is Flat.
Ah, yes.
And I'm seeing how important our curriculum is for our future. if we don't get with a program in both engineering and science, technology, we're dead in water. So
right,
I really feel strongly that that is a big push right now. We should go back maybe to something like the Sputnik days and put the emphasis on science where it should be. I think we have to counteract some of the non-scientific thinking that we've been having in the last few years, unfortunately, under this administration, where there was where there's generally been movements against stem cell research, against global warming admission. We have now our national forests being logged, and we have logging roads running through them, which we didn't have before. There's still a push to try to drill in pristine Alaskan tundra. We have not protected our borders very well. We've not signed the Kyoto Treaty. There's so many things that I think that we need to counteract, because there's such a big move on now that is not scientific.
Yeah, one of the my points, I would wholeheartedly agree, and sort of extrapolating on it's a way of thinking. If you look at what gets put forth from the news media, like Fox News, for example, you know, where is the rules of evidence? Who's thinking this through? For example, there was some little dweeb from the Bush administration.
Dweeb, that's the technical term, right?
Dweeb. Yeah.
Okay.
Dweeb, that's acronym for something. I can't tell you what it is. But anyway, this little schmarmy dweeb from the Bush administration was, oh, you know, it's his approval rating is only around 30%. It'll climb back up after gas drops below $3 a gallon. Well, what's your evidence for that? I mean, polling is, if you do it right, it's serious business and difficult. So why do you think that gas is the predominant factor? And who is it, people driving Ford Explorers like the our illustrious owner of the radio station here, they're going to start turning to Bush, you know, because I mean, so the guy just threw it out there, and the other person on didn't question it. And so that's, you know, you're not really thinking of that as science. It's not the Kyoto Accord, but give us some evidence. Where's the evidence for what you just said? And a couple of questions in, you'd find out he's just making it up. You know, he's just making it up. And without an educated, scientifically educated public, we don't have enough people asking those questions either at home or on the networks.
I'd like to add to that, if I could. One of the things I was thinking is about this push toward abstinence education. I have a friend who worked for the CDC, and her career was involving women's health and reproductive issues. And she had been a longtime scientist there, and finally was so pressured to do nothing but emphasize abstinence, which we know scientifically does not work, that she finally quit. She just couldn't take the pressure anymore. And I'm afraid this is what's happening in so many issues. Yes.
All right, we've started things off on a very controversial note. We'll get back to these in just a minute after the break. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on 1620 AM, RadioSandySprings.com. All right, good morning and welcome back to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 on your AM dial, and web and podcasting at RadioSandySprings.com. Before we sort of continue with this very controversial vein of what we started talking about with regard to the importance of science and science in the classroom, let me point out that science really ought to be something that is apolitical. This was mentioned to me by Lauren Williams, our guest for the very first show, that, you know, we happen to be picking on the current administration that simply coincidentally happens to be conservative. But and Republican, but Republicans and Democrats alike, Dave reminded me of this right during the break, are really good at just repeating stuff over and over and over again until you believe it. The nice thing about science is ultimately there is a truth. It may not come out at first, like the paper I just got back from, Computational Chemistry Journal that pointed out, well, is this really new? But the truth is, if you keep resubmitting, you keep refining it, eventually the truth will prevail. That doesn't mean that it's not difficult to get out at first, because scientists, we're people too. We have agendas, we have issues, we have personalities as well. But I think one of the things we're pointing out is the importance of science education is to give you enough background, enough critical thinking skills to be well-versed in the scientific method to do that acid test on someone saying something in the news media, right?
Well, and another thing to point, you know, if you know, your students are saying, why do I even need to take science? Well, you need it to live, you know, and we're, you know, we need people that are looking at what our leader, quote, leaders are putting out there and thinking critically, and it's like, you didn't do any homework. You know,
right.
Before you said this, you just threw it out there. Right. You did no homework. You don't know what you're talking about. And it does happen on both sides of the aisles. I mean, I heard somebody on a different radio program. We're not supposed to advertise for other people. Somebody was so anti-animal research, and she was saying that the scientists yes. are just doing this to make all this money. Well, yeah, there are a lot of billionaires out in Silicon Valley because they've been cutting up, you know, rats and mice. Right. She's on the liberal side,
right?
But she just threw it out there, and it's like, well, do you have any basis for thinking? And then it becomes a adversarial us versus the scientist kind of point of view. And you know, this person gave no evidence that, you know, where are the big mansions that the scientists that are working with lab rats.
Right, and to that end, I've mentioned this before from a book I'm in the middle of now, The Republican War on Science. Right in the introduction, the author points out that liberals and Democrats have done the same thing. In fact, it is the Greenpeace folks who claim that, why can't we use these computer models instead of animal testing? You know, I'm not a big fan of animal testing myself, but let me tell you, as someone who does computer models for biological phenomenon, we aren't even close. That's just not true.
It's too complicated.
Right. So what Bill and I are wondering is, how do you get a student excited about the fact that science is part of life?
We have a really big hands-on program at North Springs. This is how we basically teach. We're lucky in that we have a block schedule, which gives us 90 minutes each period. This gives us an opportunity to perhaps introduce a topic, to set up a lab situation, to collect data, to analyze our results, clean up, and discuss it before we leave the room, which is really wonderful. In many places, you can't do that. So our teachers in the science department there have really taken advantage of this time and have provided the students with lots of hands-on activities, having them have open-ended questions. I think five of our teachers in our department have been trained over at Emory in the PRISM program, which is a problem-based learning technique. And matter of fact, they're going to hold a seminar for all the teachers in the school before we leave for the summer, so that all the teachers in all the different subjects can do the same thing. So we present a real-world problem, and they have to figure out ways to solve it. So this will help them, hopefully, in the future to solve real problems in their lives.
Wow, so basically what we're hearing is open-ended, problem-solving, hands-on, exactly what I think show number two dealt with in the robotics competition at Georgia Tech.
Right,
exactly the opposite of the way many of our colleagues actually teach with the lecture system at Georgia Tech.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I mean, if you, again, I keep getting back to Leonardo da Vinci, but...
You're a big fan of his. You know his publicist?
And I think he's one of my fans as well, I'm sure. it was a studio environment that he learned in. So it was not formal schooling at all.
Right.
But he, you know, pursued things. He made. I was talking to a colleague over in the music department at Tech that one of his codices that's coming out from Da Vinci is on musical instruments that he built and designed.
Right.
So, he got tactile with what he was trying to do. He innovated. It was a studio kind of environment. It wasn't an hour, 50 minutes and get in and out of there.
That's exactly how we teach architecture, for example, at Georgia Tech. And I've always been jealous of the architectural folks. So maybe the lesson is that in engineering and science, we need to go back more toward the studio approach where they get some hands-on work. And we do labs, make no mistake, but the lab is very, very long, and they do it, and they get out of there, and then they write it up. There's no chance to recap and talk with the instructor about what the results mean.
Right.
Wow.
And the other thing that I wanted to ask you is what, since we got summer coming up, what things might parents do to kind of get their kids maybe involved in a hands-on kind of project over the summer? What recommendations would you have for doing that?
Well, in Atlanta, we're fortunate to have so many good facilities that you can take your children to, such as Fernbank Science Center, the aquarium, many wonderful forest trails, river trails, all kinds of classes they could take at various places. We have summer institutes for the high school students. who are doing research, working in various places. So there are a lot of sort of formal places you could go, but it doesn't really require that. You can just take your child out in the backyard, dig up worms, talk about why they're wiggling, where they're going, what are they doing, how did they get there, just some basic stuff. Walk in the woods with your child. You know, talk about why this is the way it is. How did that cup get made? Most any kind of question, just pursue it, let the child think through it, and lead them in a direction that would help them find the answers to those
then
questions.
And make them clean up after 50
and make
minutes
them clean
and
up.
Move
that's
on
right.
to somebody else.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We may have him as a future guest. The science director of the Fernbank Science Center is working with us on a Dreyfus Foundation grant, and this guy is a hoot. He's actually involved in chemistry, so that's a very interesting point. But let me ask you this. So it's a very good point. Parents take their kids out in the backyard, do this sort of thing. I know I do this sort of thing all the time, drives my kids crazy, like, Dad, we're not in school, leave us alone. But the average parent, who may not be as scientifically inclined as, say, Bill here, where do they get information about this sort of thing?
Well, of course, they can go to the library. There are so many resources there. If they have computers, they can get online and look for it. Actually, there are many lesson plans that you can find online for early, middle, and high schools.
Okay.
So even the youngest children could be inspired by something a parent could find on the Internet, for example.
Okay. Well, I think the other thing, too, to think about is as a parent, maybe let's say you're an auto mechanic. You're not a, quote, scientist or, quote, engineer,
right.
but you know how an engine works. Teach them what you know.
Right.
Exactly.
And teach them what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Whether it's gardening, you know, or whatever it is, you don't have to necessarily feel like, oh, I'm not competent to do this. You know, you can tell them what you know about the world.
All right, we'll be back after this short break. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on 1620 AM, RadioSandySprings.com. Welcome back to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. We're here with Judith Carter, chair of the science department at North Springs High School, right here in Sandy Springs, Georgia. We'll be talking a little bit more about how to engage students, but if you are listening and you have a comment or question about how to do this, if you've got any helpful advice for Bill and I, who apparently bore our students to death on a regular basis at Georgia Tech.
Very few suicides in my classes this term. You know,
feel free to give us a call at 404-943-1620. That number again, 404-943-1620. Or you can call toll-free if you're outside the Atlanta area at 866-356-0789. And, of course, these numbers are listed on the website. So previously we were talking about resources that parents can use, and Bill pointed out that do what you know. Mentioned the example of an auto mechanic, and frankly, probably the most common users of the scientific method will be auto mechanics, right, to diagnose
right.
problems. So 7 to 9 in the morning with Dave Car Talk, that'll be a scientific education as well. And certainly the web is very good. Even things as simple as the Wikipedia, if you go there, you can find amazing stuff. And hopefully Judy will give us some information. We'll post that on our website for our listeners as well.
Right.
But with regard to, have we got a caller?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pardon me?
Good morning. You're on Radio Sandy Springs, Inside the Black Box.
Good morning.
Good morning. Did you have a question or a comment?
I did. I wondered how, in the schools, in the science departments, how you deal with the difference between creationism and evolution in the within the science curriculum.
Well, that's exactly something we were just about to discuss, so I will leave that to Judy to tackle.
Thank you. That is a very controversial issue, but really not so much for us. I do have to tell you, though, that when I started teaching in Fulton County probably 15 years ago, I was looking at the curriculum and trying to determine how I was going to teach biology, and one of the topics I was to teach was organic change. Well, I have a master's in biology, but I really didn't know what that meant. So when I checked my textbook, it meant evolution, but it told me that the county and the state were afraid to say the word evolution. So I know that that's been a hot-button issue for many people for a long time, but frankly, the day I can't teach evolution is the day I walk out of the classroom because it's the basis for biology. It's the only way that biology makes sense, and we are very strong proponents of teaching it that way. I do support the teachers by sending them the legal papers, all the support papers that I can to show them that we do back it, and we are backed by the county and now by the state, finally. So it is taught, it's an integral part of our program in all biology classes and all related classes.
So with regard to the user, to the caller's question, I mean, what happens when someone brings up the issue of creationism in science?
Well, I tell them they can believe that the earth is flat. They can believe whatever they would like to believe. But in my classroom, which is a science classroom, we're going to learn the scientific basis of of change.
Yeah, that which is based on evidence, scientific
exactly.
evidence.
Scientific
okay.
evidence.
Great.
Do we have another call? Or are you? Okay. Yeah, and that I guess is a very tough thing. And we need to explore this some more. But you told me an interesting story when we chatted before the show about your first another experience you had many years ago teaching biology, where you found no reproductive physiology section.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and this speaks to parents and information.
Yes,
I think.
Exactly. A long time ago, this was in the 60s when I taught in DeKalb County, my biology textbook was strangely missing a whole system of the human body. That happened to be the reproductive system. And I'm sure the people who made the book did not want to offend the parents at that time who didn't want it taught, so they just simply left it out. And I had to make up my own unit. And at that time also, the faculty, the women faculty, had to take a leave of absence if they were pregnant by their fourth month, because they would be showing, and that might be considered a bad example for the students to know that a female teacher had had sex with her husband.
Wow.
Or the
milkman. Yeah.
We're not going to get into that.
No.
Sort of thing.
So things have changed, but we still technically are supposed to be teaching abstinence only, but we don't do that.
Right, and mainly because in a science class, all the science studies have shown that ends up backfiring on us, basically.
Exactly.
Right, and I got to tell you, as a parent with a daughter who's, what is she, a preteen now? She calls herself a tween.
How old is she?
She's 11.
Oh, yeah, my son's 12.
You know, so I'm a big fan of abstinence and abstinence education.
Yeah,
preach it on
you
a regular basis.
Right.
But her mom has a master's degree in women's ambulatory health, and she already knows a lot of the biology, because what you find is they learn it on the street from some third grader, and they usually get it wrong.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Wow.
Well, that my 10-year-old had it this week, so I...
Oh, they had the film. Where they separate the boys and the girls? Is that the one?
I don't. Okay. You know, I'm still in denial that
yes.
they're learning this stuff.
Yes.
So they go to their mom and ask her questions, and she answers them. And they ask me, and I go out and decide to, you know, clean up the yard.
Right.
Or job
you nod or, and grunt like I do.
Yeah. Like, just,
yeah.
Just don't ask me that. You know,
wow.
Sorry. Oh, for the days when you could just tell them to go. Birds
right.
and bees. And, you know.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about any specific programs you have at North Springs High School in trying to address these things. What's going on at North Springs?
Well, we really are pretty lucky. As I said, since we have the block schedule and we have the magnet program that enables us to have extra courses, you would be surprised to learn some of the classes that we teach. And I'd like to tell you just a few, if you don't mind. We have a class of Introduction to Research Methods, Organic Chemistry, Biochemistry, Medical Ethics, Anatomy, Biology, Chemistry, Physics. We have AP courses in Biology, Chemistry, Physics, and Environmental Science. We teach Geology, Global Science, Environmental Science, Engineering, Astronomy, Advanced Research Methods, and Botany. I don't think you'll find that plethora of courses in any high school around.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow. I'm particularly intrigued not only by the standard biology chemistry courses, but you have intro to research methods and advanced research methods.
Exactly.
Now, what do those entail?
The first year research methods class, the introduction, is for our ninth graders. They come in and will take that course along with either biology or honors biology. So they actually have most of them will have at least two sciences a year. So that first year, we introduce them to the scientific method. They actually they complete a project during that period of time. And we give them just a little taste of chemistry, biology, and physics. We've learned that some students shy away from especially chemistry and physics, thinking it might be too difficult. So we give them some fun, you know, wham, you know, real exciting things that they can see that makes them feel, hey, I might could do this. I might could go on in physics. This is
wow.
pretty cool stuff.
So, exciting.
Yeah.
So what is advanced scientific methods do?
That is for mostly our juniors and seniors, and we have them complete projects perhaps that they've started a year or so before. Most of them go out to universities and do research with scientists, so they're supervised there, as well as we have some working in our schools. So they really have a lot of freedom to come and go, to use other facilities as well. And these were our winners. We just had two first-place winners at the State Science Fair. We had several winners at the Georgia Science Humanities and Science and Humanities Symposium in Athens.
So, wow, that's terrific. Yeah. So after a short break, we'll be back to talk about some of those science winners, as well as our new segment, Horror Stories from the Classroom. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 on your AM dial, and at RadioSandySprings.com. Welcome back to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. We're here with Judith Carter, chair of the science department at North Springs High School right here in Sandy Springs. Now, you mentioned before the break that you had some science fair winners.
Absolutely. We had some, I think we might have had five or six. I believe we had six that went on to the state fair. Also, we have one that is going to the Governor's Honors Program this summer to represent us in science. But the ones that went on to the state fair, out of those, I think we finally had three that actually made it down to Athens because it was during spring break. But out of those, two won first place awards, one winning an extra award on top of that that had money attached to it.
Wow.
So we have some really fine
What
students.
Was your cut on this?
Unfortunately, I didn't get a cut on that one.
We're teaching because we like it, right, Bill?
Right.
That's what we say. Yeah.
I'd be in real estate speculation, I think, if money were important to me. And that's why my wife's always pushing me to get into real estate speculation. Wow, that's absolutely amazing. So you made a very important point that some of your seniors in this advanced research methods class work with scientists. Do they work with them at companies or universities? Or
mostly universities. We have some at Georgia Tech and Emory. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to develop even more communications with these research institutions, but we hope for even larger classes next year. And this has been a really good way for them to up the ante, so to speak, in their research.
Wow, that's great. I know I work with a colleague of mine, Chris Jones, on a Department of Energy grant on catalysis technology, and one of his students is actually working.
Catalysis, got to define.
Oh, catalysis.
Yes. Catalyze.
Basically, if you've got a chemical reaction, very often there's a huge energy barrier to get that to happen. So it happens very, very slowly. So what you do is you put it in the presence of a catalyst, which, believe it or not, usually involves a metal, because metals have this diffuse electronic structure that allows something to bond to it, do something, and then break away. So 90% of all catalysts are either metals or metals with an organic compound attached to it. You know the biological version of this. This is an enzyme. And enzymes, you know, something bonds to it, it does something funky,
it
reacts, folds, and then it lets it go. So this catalyst project, I believe we have somebody from Wheeler High School working with one of his PhD students who's doing some really neat stuff. He's actually synthesized some metal catalysts. So now you know where we are. You can give us an email and hit us up for...
So catalysis, for lysis, Greek for cut, and cat for, well, just cutting cat. Cats.
Okay.
That's biology.
You have the etymology of catalysis.
Yes, I'm just thought I'd throw that in.
I mean, you really are true to your word then. I mean, we pointed out near the beginning of the show that the whole reason for science classes is for people to understand the scientific method, the fact that you use that every day, whether you're fixing a car, fixing the air conditioning, or, you know, you just debugging, you know, something on your computer, or, you know, the circuit breaker goes and you try to trace back where it is.
Well, let me ask you this, Judy. How much of that correct? So you've been there for a long time. That looks like not just the standard, let's take it from Linda Shrinko and if she's listening in jail right now or whatever. But, I mean, is this something you developed this? You saw the need for the research method?
Yes.
Say a little bit about that.
Yes, we... As a team, really, our whole science team, we have teachers who are passionate about particular subjects. So we say, go for it. You know, and even if it's not a state-approved course, there's a long process, but we can even go, for example, we did this global studies, global science course. No one in the state was teaching it, and we made up the course. We wrote the curriculum, and we've got the state approval, and now everybody in Fulton County is teaching it.
So. The other thing I wanted to point out was that I think a lot of the public doesn't realize how hard you work as a school teacher. They think all these people are off in the summer, but they're working like 100 hours a week, and it's very daunting what you guys do. So we have it at the collegiate level. I have a lot of respect for the time you guys put in and what you're
doing. Absolutely. So let's take a minute and go to our new segment called
Horror Stories from the Classroom.
And I know I wish to be negative about this, but the point is, in these valiant attempts that Judy's talking about to motivate and engage students, occasionally you find a rather interesting and humorous story about the student that isn't so engaged. So anyone have an interesting story like that? Judy?
I'm thinking of a field trip that I took down to the Okefenokee Swamp. We had students from the AP Biology class go. I had one student, a guy, who was really terrified because he was afraid he would get poison ivy for some reason. He was terrified of most things, but somehow went along on our trip. We had been out in a boat, in a pontoon boat with a nature guide earlier in the day and probably seen 200 alligators. Didn't think much about it, came back, and after lunch we got in canoes. I was thinking, well, these are affluent kids. They've all canoed before, you know, no problem, send them out. So the other leader and I went ahead and looked back after we were trying to get out in this canal, and here was this one guy who was terrified, did not want to get in the canoe to start with, we found out. His buddy made him go. He was already paddling, said, we're going. And of all people, there was a fish that jumped right into the lap in the boat.
it happens, yeah.
And we had told him, whatever you do, don't stand up. But, of course, he stood up and ran. But fortunately, the boat didn't overturn. We also had students stuck in all the lily pads. They had no clue how to canoe. We thought, surely they did. And one student was sitting there with his partner, who was a female. I think he was trying to impress her. He said, don't worry. We'll get out of this. We'll just back up here. Mm-hmm. And so he said, I'm just going to push off this log. So he put his oar down on top of the log, and the log opened up its mouth. The guy suddenly figured out how to back paddle.
Right. Alligators are the mother of necessity. That's what we're learning. Wow. So science can be messy is what we're finding out here.
Yeah.
Bill, anything interesting?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a horror story, but I grew up in Mississippi, and the schools finally integrated in 1971. And so there was a black kid in my class, very militant, and he had a hand with a middle finger extended, carved in wood that he wore around, and they didn't see fit to get him to take it off, so he wore this every day. But anyway, and he was taking chemistry, and our chemistry teacher, who was very good, Ms. Sutton, she was talking about the fermentation process that yeast goes through to convert sugar to alcohol. So she was going through, here's the formula and how it's converting it to alcohol. And along the way, she also said, you know, if you have a quart of Welch's grape juice and you put this much sugar in, this much yeast, and put a balloon on the top of the bottle, after 30 days, you'll have wine. And then she started going into how vodka is made, and she noticed that everybody was taking notes, including the guy with the bird on his neck. So actually, I write, you know, a little bit of larceny motivates some people to learn this stuff. I mean, everybody was taking notes. And so, I mean, it was sort of, and I've used variations on that in the classroom.
Right, so applications are important is what we're learning.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break now, but you're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 on your AM dial, web and podcasting at RadioSandySprings.com. All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM, and at www.RadioSandySprings.com. So before the break, we were talking about our segment on horror stories from the classroom, and I have a rather simple one. This involves a student that took a course with me and never bothered to show up. Does this happen to you, Bill?
Yes.
Right. So this
rarely, but it does.
Probably
happen.
Not something that plagues the high school area. But we don't take attendance. We figure they're college students. So this is just one little suggestion for those of you thinking of going to college, in particular Georgia Tech. This student never showed up for class, failed the class. I found out he never showed up to class when he took the class the semester before with a colleague of mine, failed the class. He took it with a colleague of mine again, never showed up to class, failed the class. We don't know if he's ever going to pass this class. I'm teaching this course over the summer, don't know if he's going to sign up or not. But one simple suggestion, and I tell this to FACET students all the time and their parents, if there's one thing you can do to do well in the class, just show up. That's a big part of it.
Yeah, osmosis doesn't work unless you're near for diffusion to happen.
Right, right. And the faculty, we're not too bright. You can read the book, but the faculty will give away what's going to be on the final exam and the project. That is our job. So, okay, before we wrap up today, I want to sort of go over the segment of the show, which is what have we learned? One thing we've certainly learned from our guest, Judy Carter, that vigorous scientific education is alive and well at North Spring High School, particularly with regard to these research methods class, which I'm just amazed at. I think that's great. One theme we've talked about before on the show, and this was sort of reinforced today, that hands-on projects, hand-on lab projects that are open-ended, problem-based, are really, really important. So if you're a science teacher, that's certainly something you should do. Another thing that Judy pointed out, and Bill and I heartily agree with, is that science is a part of life, and that's why science classes are important, right? You'll use this whether you're an auto mechanic or a plumber, these sorts of things, just to use the critical thinking skills. And with regard to that last horror story and the other horror stories we mentioned from the classroom, clearly use that as a guide of things to avoid. Another thing we learned from Judy's story is that science isn't pretty. So watch out for the alligators when you're out there doing the field sample collection sort of stuff. And then, Bill, what was it about parents you mentioned before?
That a lot of people are kind of intimidated by science or engineering thing. Oh, I don't know anything about that. But you do. Whether it's if you like gardening, there's something you can teach your kid there. And it doesn't have to be something that the National Academy of Science would say, yes, this is a publishable paper.
Right.
But you know, just by living, you know something, whether it's cooking or auto mechanics or whatever, or fixing the lawnmower. You can teach your kids something and get them actively engaged.
Right. And to that end, the science project my daughter did in fourth grade was disproving my hypothesis that the Oreo cookies in the vending machines have less cream than the ones you buy in the store. She disproved it. In fact, they are heavier in the store, but they're heavier because the cookie absorbs water. And that's because one's a cellophane pack in the store, which is very impermeable, but not compared to the metallized ones in there. So they look smaller and they seem drier, but she actually disproved it.
Right.
So,
All right.
So that was very useful. I think we learned a lot. Let me thank our guest, Judy Carter. Thanks so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
All right. And perhaps as we get more interesting issues in education, we'll have to have you come back.
Yes.
Or certainly get involved in some of these science fair issues that you deal with. Right. Maybe do a simulcast, Dave. That's what we're looking for.
That would be wonderful.
The geeks on the road, that sort of thing. Okay, so I asked you before, no upcoming musical things that you're doing?
No, I'm not where you are yet on the material.
Okay.
Probably going to go into the studio for music.
And hopefully record some theme music.
Yes.
Right. That's going to be great.
My wife,
All right, I'm going to do the cheap, gratuitous plug. I'm actually going to be up at the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga, Tennessee, tonight at 8:15. So if you're listening from the Chattanooga area, come on by. And it will not only be humorous, but educational as well. And let me point out that next week we'll be talking about nuclear power. Is it a clean, low-emission energy source, or is it the radioactive boogeyman that a lot of people think? And our guest will be Professor Dan Tedder from the School of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering at Georgia Institute of Technology. Dan does research in nuclear waste and nuclear waste processing. He actually teaches a course at Georgia Tech on nuclear power. Other than that, you've been listening to Inside the Black Box on 1620 AM. Also web and podcasting at RadioSandySprings.com, and we'll see you next Saturday.